Well, so I'm very pleased to introduce Professor Igor Dolgachev, who's visiting us from the University of Michigan. He's a distinguished algebraic geometer. He's going to tell us something which is pure algebraic geometry.
Okay.
And we'll have dinner afterwards. Please come talk to me.
Thank you for inviting me. Well, this is my second visit of Texas, and it's very nice to escape cold weather in Michigan, I think. So I have a very difficult task because I have to relate to really great areas in mathematics, and both of them requires substantial background to understand the main problems of the subject, so hyperbolic geometry and algebraic geometry. So kind of was very difficult to me just to see what kind of level I have to give my talk. So I try to kind of lower as much as possible because I see a lot of young faces in the back rows, I think. So the hyperbolic geometry starts with the very simple linear algebra thing. Just you take a vector space of reals, find a dimensional which has a signature, has an inner product or symmetric bilinear form, which signature one positive and say n negative. Or you can, depending on your taste, you take the opposite one. So just you can really choose a basis in the space and make it kind of standard space. So choosing your, say, corresponding, say, quadratic form or just the norm of the vector equal to like x0 square minus sum of xi square. So this is usually goes under different names, just it calls Minkowski space. It's called a Lorentzian space. So it's called the pseudo-Euclidean space. It's called hyperbolic space, like hyperbolic vector space. It's not exactly what hyperbolic space, which I'll introduce in a moment. So hyperbolic geometry starts with a little different construction. So you pick up in the space the set of all vectors. So I'll call this head vector with this is inner product of itself, such that this is a positive. So I choose this signature. I stick to this signature. And then you divide it by positive numbers and consider a subset of the real projective space. So just a real projective space suggests you take the whole vector space, throw away this origin, and divide by invertible numbers. This is a real projective space. Or for algebraic geometers, we write it a little different. It is real points of projective space, which is defined like over Z. And so the image of this thing, okay. So this is called hyperbolic space. And this is the main object. So what's good about this space? So it admits some Riemannian metric. And this is just one of the three simply connected Riemannian spaces of constant sectional curvature. So the one of them is a familiar sphere, which is a positive curvature. Another one, the Euclidean space and dimensional. This is a flat space with curvature 0. And this one with curvature, say, if you normalize it, will be constant negative curvature. So it's one of the three main really spaces were studied by geometers for many, many years. So just so there are different models of this thing because we use different models to see the points in projective space by normalizing the vector. Just this is like vectors or lines up to scalars, so just there are different ways to normalize and choose a representative in the orbit. So one is a representative, just normalize the norm and consider just this all vectors x such that this norm is equal to 1. So just so like in this coordinates will be just x square minus xi square is equal to 1. So this is hyperboloid, like if n equal to 3, I think, or 2, I think. So this will be just something what we all study in calculus. And you see, this is a two-sheeted hyperboloid. So you take one of the connected components of this thing, and this will be just a representative. And then this is chooses a point in this projective space. So this is called vector model of Hessian. There are different models. For example, you affinize it. Go to the affine coordinates, because from this folded static zero is not zero. So you homogenize and take the coordinates, say, zi is equal xi over x0, because x0, and then get point z1, zn, just in homogeneous coordinates. And of course, because we choose this inequality, you see just they satisfy the sum of the zi square is less than 1. And this is, of course, ball. Of unit ball. And just in Euclidean space Rn. So this is called the... So if you choose the metric in such a way that in this vector model, the metric becomes in such a way that distance between two points, if you take the hyperboloid, what is it, just... You take the cosine hyperbolic of the distance, this will be exactly your inner product. And this is how metric works in this vector model. But of course, you can really go to this model and see the metric little difference. And with this metric, when you kind of, this is called the Klein model. So another model is just called Poincaré model of this hyperbolic space. So this is just, again, gives you different model, but it's rather a little more complicated. This also looks like a ball, but the metric is different in this ball. So just what you do, just you use the stereographic projection. So you take a kind of sphere and just think this is just your ball, but dimension, if you cut it by diameter, diametral plane, this is a ball of dimension one less than dimension of the sphere. And then you kind of project and use the model of this like plane ball as an upper hemisphere. And then you take stereographic projection from the southern pole, and you go to the Euclidean space, and then, again, the image of this will be the same thing, but distance will be different. This is called Poincaré model. So the same thing, but it's called, but a different model, and you have to rewrite your metric. There is another model, was the upper half plane, but I don't want to talk about this. So just, of course, you can visualize this everything in the smallest non-trivial dimension, like plane, so the hyperbolic plane. And so if you specialize everything to the plane, of course, this is all familiar with from non-Euclidean geometry. So just like your Klein will be just interior of a unit circle. And then in this metric, your geodesic lines will be just lines. It joins two points. And this will be a geodesic line. But Poincaré model is also looks like that. It's also unit disk. But if you rewrite what will be metric there, what will be geodesic lines, they look a little different. So they look like arcs of the circles, which are perpendicular to the boundary circle. So, but of course, some of them will be lines if you pass through the origin. It also will be lines. So there, as the spaces, they are the same, but since we're considering Riemannian spaces, the metric looks different. I can write down the formula for the metric, but I don't need it. So again, so this is just really example. Of course, everybody should know that. This is just the kind of one of the main achievements of mathematics. This was invented by Lobachevsky and Boyai. And then this is, of course, all these pictures from Lobachevsky papers about non-Euclidean geometry. So this is, of course, very familiar to especially two-dimensional case. And for topologists, of course, the most important case, it's a three-dimensional hyperbolic space, which really kind of the source of hyperbolic geometry of three manifolds. So now let's go to algebraic geometry and see where do I see this kind of guys in the context of my subject, which is algebraic geometry. So in algebraic geometry, we study, as everybody can guess, algebraic varieties. So we will really stick to the complex numbers, but my favorite field is field of characteristic P. Okay. So just you can consider varieties over any field. So just so there's a variety, so this will be smooth. It's really complex manifold. Say of complex dimension, say N. But algebraic variety differ from complex manifolds by the fact that just they are special complex manifolds, they admit embedding into projective space. So you can go to projective space of some dimension. And then they're given by algebraic equation. And because they are projective space, homogeneous equations. Polynomials more than homogeneous. Many equations, it has nothing to do with dimension, nothing to do with N. It's just system of algebraic equations. This is what we study in algebraic geometry. It's kind of, if you ask me, what is algebraic geometry? I would say just algebraic geometry is just geometrical study of system of algebraic equation. Every system of equation can be homogenized, and you go to this projective space, and this is what we study. So as you kind of understand, this must be one of the oldest subjects in mathematics, and it is. So as a complex manifold, it's also topological. It's really smooth. 2N manifold, just as a real variety. And as such, it has a cohomology. Yes, with any coefficients, like you take, for example, complex coefficients, but you may take real coefficients or integer coefficients, they have cup product. So if you have a, then you go by cup product in cohomology to HK plus M. And if you just pair this dimension, if you take K plus M is equal to a dimension of your smooth real dimension, this is a pairing, non-degenerate. This is called Poincaré duality. But this is one good thing about complex manifolds. It has nothing to do with algebraic varieties. The only thing I use is just the smooth, compact manifold. But if you go to algebraic varieties, in fact, even you don't need that, but Keller varieties, they have remarkable decomposition. So your cohomology admits what's called Hodge decomposition. So just you can split the whole cohomology into part, which has the property that just if you take conjugate space, then that will be HQP. And just your pairing, this cup product on cohomology respects that, respects its Hodge decomposition. So for example, also on this cohomology, so just like, let me just take the special case, because I don't have really much time. So let's assume that my M is even, and in fact this is just congruent to 2 mod 4. Oh no, let's first assume it's slim. Just 2 M. So for example, M is equal to 1, it will be what we call algebraic surface, complex dimension 2. Like M equal to 2, it will be fourfold. But I assume the even. Why I assume the even? Because if I take now the cohomology middle dimension, then they can cup with itself. And of course, again, as I said, if you choose the fundamental class of your manifold, then you can make identification with C, and this gives you bilinear form. So again, you can put any coefficients here. You can put, say, real coefficients or like integer coefficients. And also, in this case, so you take the part of this Hodge decomposition, so which M part. And it also will be kept with itself. So it will be bilinear form on this part, which M. And so what's good about this part, so just it satisfies this property. So just you can consider, for example, with cohomology. And this will be a real part. And And you also take the integer part. This is what will be important. You intersect this part with integer cohomology. And now we have a bilinear form on real vector space, which becomes now real vector space on dimension, what we call it HPP. HMM is dimension. And you have inside of this space, you have also what we call lattice. When you kind of divide it by torsion, you can embed it, integer cohomology embeds into real cohomology, and since there's a complete lattice, so it spans the vector space. Also just on this cup product, on this HN, so you can really, the kind of this Hodge decomposition comes with many good things. In particular, it tells you what's the signature on the real part of the space. And it's kind of, we have this kind of theorem, it's called Hodge index theorem. This says just the, so that if you take the M also even, so if you take M congruent to like 2 mod 4, so for example now 2 is still okay, but you have to skip 4, you go to 6, to other thing. This is symmetric, it's symmetric bilinear form. So just then HM M real pairs which MM real, and this is symmetric form. Also, we always consider varieties, well, here just comes a projective geometry, or again, or Keller manifold. There is a special cohomology class in X, because my variety sits in a projective space. So in projective space, there are special cohomology classes, hyperplane. So space of codimension 1, projective space. You could cut it with X and take this class of this. And this like class H of hyperplane section. Like again, if you study algebraic geometry, like this class is a divisor on variety, corresponds to line bundle, which is like O1 for what we call it in algebraic geometry. So what you can do, just you can really consider the what's called primitive cohomology. You take all these classes, X here, which when you cup with H, you'll get zero. So of course, cupping with H sends you HMM to HM plus 1, M plus 1. So just so you take the kernel of cup with hyperplane section. This is called primitive cohomology. So the Hodge index theorem tells you on primitive part, it's negative definite. So on primitive part, primitive, this cup product is negative definite. So for example, if you add to this, so for example, now this is really now we see where this Minkowski or Lorentzian spaces appear in algebraic geometry. So if we assume, for example, this part is one dimensional, next one. And this, for example, true if it's surface, if it's two-dimensional. Then just as you see, this map will be also, there's what's called Hart-Lefschetz theorem, which tells it will be just surjective map. And this space will be always, yeah, so just, then just, you know, we see just, then this implies that the whole space is hyperbolic. Okay? So what's the example of this thing? So now, okay, this is the moral. This is what I wanted to say. So they're kind of, see the spaces of this signature 1N in algebra geometry, they're realized on this part of the cohomology of complex variety, on this middle part, which takes the Hodge decomposition of type MM. So what's good about this Hodge decomposition is the following thing. So inside of this, so inside of this thing space lies very special cycles, algebraic cycles. It's called algebraic cycles. So what we consider just as n mx sits here. In fact, it sits even over z. Or just we'll do it like over z. This is a This will be algebraic cycles. What's called modulo. So they kind of homological equivalence. So what are they? Just this is algebraic variety. So you have plenty of curves on this algebraic variety. For example, you take hyperplane section, cut it again by hyperplane section until you get something like of dimension, right dimension of middle dimension. And this will be algebraic subvarieties. They're also given by equations. So you take the classes. So you consider all these kind of classes which are kind of linear combination of this class. So this is just classes of curves. Or not curves, of like n-dimensional subvarieties. M-dimensional subvarieties. Half dimension. And of course they don't fill the whole space, but they just fill some part of the space, and this will be some cycles which are not here called transcendental. Kind of all cosmology cycles can split into parts. Some of them come of algebraic nature, they came from curves lying on this variety. Some of them of different nature, which is kind of transcendental nature. They're kind of orthogonal complement with respect to the pairing. This is algebraic, and so just so the class of every algebraic cycle really of course belongs to real part, but it really has this property that really belongs to integer part. So, but it's not necessarily the whole thing, and of course in the whole cosmology, but because of the integer part, they're always represented by integer class. But of course some of you probably heard of this $1 million prizes in mathematics, so this is a harsh problem, which one of this $1 million prizes says that nmx, so if you take this nmx is called, how does it say it, it's the set of all kind of vectors x in HMM Z of X, such a sum NX becomes algebraic. In other words, this is just kind of saturation. So you take this thing and just saturate it, consider all cycles, which all classes, which just some multiply. This class may be not algebraic, but if you kill it by some n, it becomes algebraic. And this is a Hodge problem. So if you really, so it's not known in a higher dimension. Yeah. So just you can really think for like. So this condition, of course, satisfied if just is just this is equal to one, if m is a one, right? If n is a two, and this, of course, x is a surface, and so there is no problem. And for surfaces, everything what I told you just can be found like in Hartshorne book on algebraic geometry. You don't need even to assume any Hodge decomposition. This was basically known to Italian algebraic geometers. So you don't need any Hodge conjecture. It's always true. And just it's a Hodge theorem true for surfaces always. Okay. So just for surfaces, we know if you take again algebraic cycles, the group of algebraic cycles on surface, it will be just curves N1 of X. And just take it, like multiply it by reals. Take it in H11 over reals. And this is hyperbolic space, a signature. One. N has nothing to dimension. I think this was a bad choice of N. Okay, so it's not nothing to the dimension. It's just it's dimensionless space. So this is usually called Picard number of X. And so rho x is just dimension of this space. Okay, so this is just how. So now we can really do hyperbolic space. So we can assign now just kind of to algebraic hyperbolic space of this dimension, which like we do this associated to this vector space, to M1, X, all real. And start see what can we get from hyperbolic geometers, and so what kind of application we can find, because they have a lot of knowledge about geometry of hyperbolic space. We'll see what does it give it to us, to algebraic geometry. And of course, what's the kind of geometry suggests this, just all these kind of spaces, geometrical spaces, studied from the point of view, what's the group of symmetries of this? And this is how Riemannian spaces of constant curvature are distinguished. So you consider the group of isometries of your hyperbolic space. So, of course, just in this definition which I gave you, just it's rather clear what it should be. Just this is just a really projective orthogonal group corresponding to quadratic form, which I wrote you, just of signature 1n. Or just you may get rid of projective space, it's just really orthogonal group, but it's just one component, subgroup of index 2 of the orthogonal group, which preserves one of these halves of this two-sheeted hyperboloid. And this is a Lie group. And this is a Lie group of isometries of this hyperbolic space. So, for example, what you can do, you can study subgroups of these groups. And we study discrete subgroups. So this is a Lie group. So for every Lie group, you have a notion. What does it mean, discrete subgroup of Lie group, of like, for example, group of matrices? And so this discrete group acts, of course, discretely on your hyperbolic space and gives you kind of orbits which will be discrete. And you can, for example, divide by gamma. This is where topology starts. For example, n equal to 3, you divide by this group, you get the orbit space that will be three-dimensional hyperbolic manifold. So it also acts, so just the hyperbolic space can be completed. Like in model which I gave you as a kind of ball, you add the circle, the boundary of this unit ball, the sphere, not circle, the sphere. So just it also acts on the boundary. So just this will be like sphere of dimension n minus 1, and so acts, but not necessarily discretely. So it acts discretely inside, but not outside. So you have to kind of this find a maximal subset where it acts discretely, just or the opposite, the subset where it doesn't act discretely. And this is called limit set. So the every such group comes with a set which is called limit set. So this is a subset of your boundary of this. What boundary is also following Klein. It's called absolute of your hyperbolic space. And so just so this is, you have some set on this absolute of points where this is discontinuity of this action. And so what is the set? It just is also equal to the kind of closure of fixed points. What's called hyperbolic and parabolic motions. So hyperbolic motion, it just again, I don't have no time, but some of you, of course, studied this thing. So like in this model, I think, for example, if this is a two points, this is just a hyperbolic motion, has these two fixed points, and kind of acts on this geodesic by translating by the length of this thing. So one parametrical subgroup of this hyperbolic translates along this geodesic line, it has two fixed points, and parabolic has one fixed point as a boundary, and just kind of the orbits of these horospheres. And just you, if you look at all elements in your group which are either hyperbolic or parabolic, and take the closure of the set in the absolute, this is your limit set. And on the rest, the group acts nicely. It acts kind of discontinuous. So this will have a really major role in my application to algebraic geometry. So it also comes with the notion, it's called the Hausdorff dimension, this thing, on this lambda gamma. And this is some real number which is which you can attach to this. It's kind of fractal set you can attach to this set, and then just it will play the role in the following. Okay, so this is just, again, hyperbolic side. Let's go back to algebraic geometry. So how do I see the group of isometry of hyperbolic space? They come, of course, from automorphism of algebraic variety. So algebraic variety, just any complex manifold, has a group of all symmetries to itself, but preserving the structure of a complex manifold, just complex by holomorphic maps, which preserve X. And this is also Lie group, but complex Lie group. But it's kind of little strange. It's not really because it has a contained, connected component of identity, but the quotient group could be really infinite group, like countable group. And so for every algebraic variety, for, as always, I assume projective algebraic variety, so this group is just a Lie group, like finite-dimensional Lie group, like an algebraic group, in fact. And this group is kind of discrete group. So it's like discrete group. So it may contain only finitely many, consists of only finite connected components. But in most interesting case, it contains infinitely many components, which form kind of discrete, kind of countable group. And now, of course, it has a representation. So as soon as I have element, I can see how it acts on cohomology. And so this representation, in fact, just it's really preserves this inner product because it preserves the cup product. So it goes to like H11, or just you can go to, yeah, it's better take the smaller space on X. And of course, it also preserves integer structure, which is some kind of lattice of the rank equal to rho X. So just take a curve, for example, classes represented by algebraic cycle, apply your G, or take inverse just to make it representation, and take cohomology class. And so it's kind of very natural action on your automorphous group. In fact, automorphous group on X on every object you can functorially associate algebraic variety. Pick anything you want, like fundamental group, or anything which behaves functorially with respect to maps between algebraic varieties, your automorphous group start acting on this thing. Just, this is how you study kind of symmetry groups by using representation on some more easier object. And of course, I didn't make a mistake because it's very easy to see. This is kind of discrete thing. It's just a lattice, an orthogonal group of the like quadratic form over integers. And this is connected group. It's an algebraic group of matrices. Of course, it can't act non-trivially on something discrete. Of course, you have to prove it. That's quite kind of obvious. So just only you have to study discrete part, how it acts. Okay, and let's take this image of this thing. So call it kind of, say phi of this thing, of phi, or call it just automorphous X star. This will be just image of this thing. And now you get yourself discrete group. So this is my gamma. So now it's a discrete group. It acts on here, and of course it acts on hyperbolic space, which you associate to this Minkowski space. And so you get a discrete group which acts on your corresponding hyperbolic space. So now you can really ask, there is a different kind of category of groups which you study in hyperbolic geometry. For example, group could be what we call a lattice, discrete group. If you just volume of this quotient of your space is finite, so it's called lattice, or it's called a finite covolume group. So another kind of good groups which are hyperbolic geometry study, this is group even better, like if HN mod gamma is compact. So they call it like a uniform lattice, so co-compact discrete groups. Or again, many theorems developed in hyperbolic geometry assume that gamma what's called geometrically finite. So this is kind of the typical, and geometrically finite means just really what you can really, for every discrete group, you try to find a fundamental domain. And so geometrically finite, again, roughly speaking, means the following thing. Let me draw the picture in the two-dimensional case. So it has a fundamental domain which is a polyhedron, finite polyhedron, but polyhedron in the ambient space, in projective space, so just so like here, just you may see only kind of remaining on this polyhedron. So just so for example, this is just kind of still kind of you take this inside, and this will be your fundamental domain for your group gamma. So if you want this volume to be finite, you don't allow this kind of thing. All your vertices might lie at inside of the closure. Maybe if you want it compact, then the vertices must lie inside here. Like for example, this will be case which finite volume. It's called ideal triangle on Lobachevsky plane. And on this plane, this will look like in Poincaré model as a just co-compact. Okay, so this is a groups which are well studied and have application in hyperbolic geometry. And of course, the first fundamental question in algebraic geometry, which groups of automorphism satisfy this property? So when just they in the quotient are really, and for example, it follows from definition of this fundamental domain that every geometrically finite group is finitely presented. It's finitely generated discrete group, and also it has finitely many defining relations. So just it's given by generators and relations. Not every such group is geometrically finite at higher dimension, but it's certainly finitely presented group. So for example, this is, we don't know this, kind of one of the main problems of algebraic geometry. So is the algebraic variety, again, all is smooth, for which automorphous group, or you study only this group. This part is not interesting. You cancel this. It's not finitely generated. So then, or kind of you can say conjecture that all automorphous group of all algebraic varieties always finitely generated. Not automorphous group really, just these images, these discrete parts. This part is algebraic group, of course, it's big. It's not finitely generated. So this is not known even in dimension 2. So even n is equal to 2, then it's algebraic surface. This is not known. Though so nobody constructed an example of algebraic variety for which the group of a discrete part of the group of automorphism is not finitely generated. And again, you go through classification of algebraic surfaces, so two-dimensional algebraic varieties, and look at this, just most of the surfaces which we call general type surfaces, they have the property that this group is finite group. The image of this group is finite. Because for general type, it must preserve one vector here, which is a class of hyperplane section. And this vector has positive norm. So it also preserves orthogonal complement of this. And this becomes orthogonal group of negative definite lattice, which is a finite. And this is the proof for general type. So other surfaces has this group, which is a could be geometrically finite, but I think it's kind of what topologists call elementary group. It just up to finite index, it's just free abelian group. So this was called elliptic surfaces of Kadaer dimension 1. The most interesting class one just acts as a K3 surface. And this means your canonical or your it's only one holomorphic form. So if you take the holomorphic form on X, it's just one dimensional. It's represented and also simply connected. So this is kind of one of the most interesting algebraic surfaces. Example of this surface is a surface given by quartic equation in P3. And this was studied since 19th century. So I can write a book about K3. So not one book, several books. And the other examples will be like similar nature, like torus, like we call abelian surface, say torus, but algebraic torus. So where this is not obvious because the group could be infinite. Another case, it will be just Enrique's surface. So what is this? It's just it's a quotient of this K3 surface by fixed point free involution. So in other words, it has a universal cover, which is happened to be K3 surface. And there are some other cases, what's called hyperelliptic, which is not interesting. This is here, we know everything. And so only, and of course, so the other cases where it could be also rational surface. So Russian surface is just obtained, it just which is a, there is a bimeromorphic map or birational map from this surface to projective plane. Or just, you don't need this general definition to check this when this is really interesting, the group is really interesting. It just suggests you can say this group surface obtained by blowing up. So what is an algebraic geometry? There's a very remarkable operation. So if you have algebraic variety and you have a point on this, you can throw away everything unchanged and replace this point by class of CP1, by a curve CP1. You make this union also algebraic surface. And then you can do it again and again. And so you start taking a surface, then blow up one point, then blow up another point, replacing the point by CP1. And then altogether it becomes another algebraic surface. So there is also kind of process which opposite. You take a surface and look at the curves, which looks like isomorphic to CP1 on algebraic surface. And if self-intersection as a cup product with itself on complex four manifold is -1, you can go back. You can blow it down. And this is called, again, goes back to 19th century mathematics. I think it's all kind of standard tools. So this is a rational surface which obtained by this process. You start with very simple one, CP2, like a, and then just start blowing up as many points as possible, and then you have to blow up just n greater than 9 points. Really better 10 to make it interesting. To see this in discrete group, which is really will be infinite group, and then you ask this question. So we know the answer for this problem for the case of K3 surfaces. We know the answer for Enrique surfaces, for Torii, but we don't know the question here. Okay, so this now really becomes very simply stated problem, I think. So you can kind of go back and read all my definitions and start working on this, I think. So you take surface which looks very simple. You take CP2, blow up some points, just close your eyes and blow some points. But if you close your eyes and blow some points, the group will be, automorphism will be trivial. So just there is a theorem. So if you just take at random points, or just kind of what call generic points, and blow them up, there are no symmetries of this guy. So just to make some, create some symmetries, create some interesting infinite group, you have to find really points in special position. Okay? When you blow them up, you really get interesting group of symmetries of your hyperbolic space. And you may try to find such a set that this group of symmetries is not finely generated. In particular, it's not geometrically finite. And if you solve this problem, this would be great, I think. This would be really something, I think. So I tell you what kind of special interesting cases. For example, you can get this special sets will be like this. You take a curve of degree 6. Take polynomial, homogeneous polynomial of degree 6. So this will be a curve on projective plane of degree 6, right by 6 equi. This curve is not necessarily, will be singular, so just it acquires nodes. So it means just partial derivatives at some points would be just equal to zero, and it will be two branches. So this will be like, in local equation, it will be given by this equation. And let's make it 10 such points. So this will be a curve which has a, I don't know, I hope I do it right. Okay. Somewhere it must be 10 nodes. Okay. So, in fact, this is maximum possible because, you know, you see how the genus of the corresponding Riemann surface changes when you acquire nodes. And curve of genus 6, when it has no singular points, has genus Riemann surface of genus 10. When you impose node, it decreases node by 1. And as much as you can, leaving this curve irreducible, you'll get just only 10 nodes. Okay, so it's called 6 nodal, 10 nodals. Blow them up. Take this point. Blow them up. So you get this remarkable surface for which group is very interesting. So just let me just describe this group, because this is next what I wanted to describe. You just some of these discrete groups which you get in hyperbolic geometry, and we use a lot. It's called Coxeter groups or reflection groups. So before I explain you what will be this group and what will be the image and what will be just the corresponding lattice, let me remind you what's the another thing, chapter from the both course, geometry and algebra to theory of groups. So you know that the orthogonal group of probability 4 is generated by reflections, or just subgroup of this. Yeah. This again facts which I don't know whether you teach here in a linear algebra course. So I did when I taught, by the way, in Ann Arbor. So this is a reflection, just a very special transformation. You take any vector, say E, and take a reflection which sends your vector x to x minus 2 x e e e e. So it has a remarkable property. If you plug in E, you see that the vector E goes to minus E, right? So this is why it's called reflection. But if you take all vectors which are perpendicular to E, then this is zero, and they are fixed, okay? So this is why it's called reflection. This will be a mirror of your reflection. And every orthogonal transformation of this, with this signature, of course, the same thing is true for definite forms, just as generated by reflections. You try to see when this kind of group generated by reflection is a discrete group. And then it must be conditioned, because if you have like an angle on the P2, you have to start repeating this. Product of two reflections will be rotation, and then you have to at some point come back, otherwise it's not discrete action. Okay? And the condition is the following. So this group must be generated, like if you take S like EN, and group generated by reflections is discrete. If the following is satisfied. We assume that just because if you multiply it by scalar, nothing will change. This will be the same transformation. Okay, so just normalize and assume that they are kind of unit vectors. And so, again, I have to assume that if you want to see something in the hyperbolic space, this vector must be negative. Because otherwise it's positive, orthogonal component will be negative definite, and intersection of your hyperbolic space is empty. So all reflections must be with respect to vectors of negative norm. Then the condition is very simple. So what EI, EJ, must be either just really called greater than 1. So this is called like a divergent. Or just EI, EJ must be equal to cosine of the angle, which this is just integer or infinity. Of course, when it's infinity, this means they're parallel, the corresponding orthogonal complement mirrors, because and so this is just gives you kind of polyhedron, fundamental domain, because polyhedron, such as this angles, if they're really either they divergent, that's okay, but if they have really formed some angle on your space, then the angle must be special, it must be cosine pi or mu j. So you kind of collect this data into kind of different information. It's called, for example, Coxeter diagram. So you just assign to every such vertex such EI, a point, a vertex, and join them by in H, if just this is MIJ, just kind of, or in fact, MIJ minus what? Minus 2, right? H's, or just you put, okay, MIJ just above this, or just you join them by dotted line, if this is, they are divergent. And if this is equal to infinity, you join one by the thick line. So if MIJ is equal to 3, then it's like simple. You don't put any, don't bother to put any mark. And every such Coxeter group is defined by this Coxeter diagram, which really gives you a group as a Coxeter, abstract Coxeter groups. It defines your generators, reflections with these vectors. And also define your basic relations, which really corresponds to SEI, SEJ, MIJ is equal to 1, where just I think MII is equal to 1, I think. You also add this kind of thing. And this is an abstract Coxeter group, so this is where the groups which you get. So just so in this example, what I consider, so you first look at this corresponding to your lattice. And so in this case, your lattice of your surface of this is, by the way, called Cobol surface. So I think I name it like that, but Arthur Cobol was a president of American Mathematical Society in the 30s, and he was a chairman of math department in Illinois for more than 20 years. So Arthur Koblen. And so just so this is just the space of just Z1. Then, so this means just this is just sits in this hyperbolic space as just integer vectors. But you see this vector also has this very special vector. It's called what called we call it canonical class of the series. So this is the first chain class of your tangent bundle, and you see how it changes when you blow up. And it's defined as a vector, which you can really think of just this vector here, which looks like that. Okay? So then, of course, canonical, because it's canonical, is preserved with respect to any automorphism. Okay? Because it's defined canonically, I think. So just so you may assume that your kind of image of your group lies in the complement of this thing. Just its self-intersection of this Kx is equal to negative 1. So it's all right. It's a negative norm. If you take orthogonal complement, it's still hyperbolic space. So you take the orthogonal complement. And now this will be just hyperbolic space of dimension equal to 10. And then it's generated by, you just solve this equation, just the obvious solution will be like these vectors. E1 minus E2, E9 minus E10, and say E0 minus E1. Minus E2, minus E3. And just this is vectors, this vectors, like calling them alpha I, they satisfy the equal to minus 2. And they intersect according to the following diagram. It's called E10. So it consists of 10 vertices. And just this diagram means this vectors of all self-intersection minus 2, but they are joined by an edge if alpha I, alpha j is equal to 1. But when you normalize, this is becomes Coxeter diagram of some special polyhedron in nine-dimensional hyperbolic space. And so my group just becomes gamma, this kind of group in the automorphism, in the isometry group of nine-dimensional hyperbolic space. And so you can really describe what is this group. So this is a finitely generated. So you prove this really finitely generated. And this is really consists of all transformations G such that they at identity mod 2 means just a difference between the image of a vector and this vector is divisible by 2. Okay? So it's called congruent subgroup of this reflection group. So if you take the group generated by reflections, so this is kind of wild group of this lattice. And you take two congruent subgroups, this will be your group gamma. This will be automorphous group. In fact, this is just the whole group. If you take generically, this will be. If you take my 10 nodes generically. So I used 2 minutes just to say why I mentioned this limit set. Okay, so this is kind of very interesting groups and just the kind of problems in algebraic geometry. So this what by the way, I'll give 3 more lectures during these 2 weeks. So if you're interested, I'll give you more details and, of course, give you many more examples of this kind. So kind of the problem in algebraic geometry, one of the main problems, to compute the group of symmetry of algebraic variety. If you study some object in mathematics, the first thing you do, you compute how symmetric they are. So and for us, I think it's very important to compute the group of automorphisms of algebraic variety, and we try to express them in terms of hyperbolic geometry, identifying them in the kind of groups which are familiar in hyperbolic geometry, for example, with Coxeter groups, or the reflection subgroups, and just the groups, and just say something more if you use, like, but I just say in 2 minutes you can, the recent application of really very deep things in hyperbolic. This is things, of course, very nice, but not that kind of deep. I'm sure hyperbolic geometers have many more interesting results. And this results about this Hausdorff dimension on the limit set. So you ask this kind of questions in algebraic geometry as follows. Suppose you have a curve, and you take a class of curve. And suppose you have hyperplane section. And suppose you have automorphism. So you may measure intersection of this class with class of H, and this is called degree of this curve. So your algebraic variety embedded in a projective space, if you intersect with hyperplane, a curve, this becomes a number, which is called degree of the algebraic curve. So now suppose you have a group, and then you start applying to this curve the automorphism and take this kind of set, take the orbit. Suppose they have a group of automorphism of your surface. And you want to see how this degree of this curve grows. So you have to kind of find the asymptotic, so the kind of you take the number of these elements like G, C prime, in orbit of my group of C, such as the degree of this curve is less than some number T. And I want to see with how, what's the limit of this thing? Then T goes to infinity. Or just even more general, what will be the asymptotic terms of this, how many? So this is kind of, you look like as a kind of ball. And this is kind of old problem, how many integer point in the lattice come in the ball, and they start increasing the volume of the ball, and see how lattice grows, right? How many lattice points. And this is a similar problem in algebraic geometry. So how many, how fast the degree of this curve go if you start applying automorphs of algebraic, of some of the group of automorphs of the surface. And this is a problem from hyperbolic geometry, in fact, from the ergodic theory in the hyperbolic geometry, because this is a problem about equidistribution. You think as a class of the curve, just as a point in the, if the C prime is positive, then it lies in hyperbolic space. And H is also hyperbolic space. And you express this kind of degree by hyperbolic distance. And this is kind of becomes a problem. How many points in the hyperbolic space come into the orbit of your discrete groups? And just so, just and this is a, if your C square is zero, then the distance in hyperbolic geometry is not defined. This point comes to absolute. But there is a way out of this, because when you do just, you take this point, you take the horosphere, and take a point like H, and measure kind of closest distance to this. You fix a horosphere, and make, and this is what you call the distance from your point in hyperbolic space to the point in absolute. And if C square is negative, you also, there is a trick. You take orthogonal complement of the vector of negative definite. And this will be your hyperplane in your hyperbolic space, and take a vector, and you measure the distance to this hyperplane. And this is what you call the distance from a point of hyperbolic space to any vector in my projective space. Okay? And then this problem was solved by many, many people. And so one of them, kind of the most important contributor, he or who had solved this kind of problem, in fact, not only found the limit, but found kind of the asymptotic terms in terms of some ergodic measures. And just when I apply this kind of very, very powerful result, I think this is one of the probably the best results in ergodic theory in recent years, you get the solution, this algebraic geometry problem, see that this is becomes, it's really equal to some, if you divide it, this thing by T power Hausdorff dimension of your limit set of your group, and this will be just constant, which depends only on your group, and of course on this vector H, but not very much, and the C. But I think, so just so, this is just, so you really find the limit. You see just, this is really goes like really polynomial. So just, it's really, but of course this is kind of number, it's not rational, not integer, it's just real number. So you really solve this problem in algebraic geometry, which we kind of, we really wanted to solve this problem. And we didn't know how, but when we kind of restated the result in terms of hyperbolic geometry and applied kind of the, push the buttons in hyperbolic geometry, so we found that the solution is obvious, and this was all known to hyperbolic geometers, and this is a solution. Okay, so just so we know this distribution. So it's very important here, just the group is very special, so the group here just is a geometrically finite, non-elementary. Because if you really try to solve this problem for one single G, you just take the cyclic group and take, start applying to this group, and start to see how the group, it's a completely different problem. It's a really difficult problem that nobody knows the answer. So it tells us a group big enough, so it's a geometrically finite, not elementary, so you kind of think like it works in a collective, as a team. And then you can do it. Okay, if you have a single automorphism, one element, and take this, see the orbit and see how this degree grows under one single element, you can do that. So we don't know. We know some special results, but we don't know the answer. This assumption is very, very important. So this is non-elementary geometrically finite. So this is why it's important to find examples in algebraic geometry of automorphous group of algebraic surfaces, which are geometric finite and non-elementary groups, besides the whole automorphous group, which very often is. Okay, thank you very much.
Igor will give three lectures, one on Thursday in the geometry seminar, 3:30, one on Tuesday, and then one on Thursday of next week at the same time. And if you all are interested, I hope you'll come. So, any questions for our speaker?
So, did you say for the Kobol surface, the image of the automorphism group is the whole of the Kobol group?
No, this is a Congress 2 subgroup.
Congress 2 subgroup, nice.
For generic one, but it could be even finite if you specialize this thing. But if you take generic, it's a congruent. Well, it's finite index. Okay, so it's a finite index. And so it's finite generated because it's finite index in the orthogonal group.
I have a question, which is how wild are the possible dimensions of Hausdorff dimensions for limit sets?
No, it depends. I think it's just between N minus, I think, I'm sure people here know much better than I do, I think. If I think it's non-elementary group, I think this is a something like that, right? And it could be like, for example, I didn't hear, so if you come one of these lectures, then I'll tell a very beautiful example. It's called Apollonian packings, sphere packings, where just these numbers can be computed. And of course, this has application. This is, you probably know these pictures here of sphere packing, yeah. And this kind of nice pictures. And then just, this has also application to algebraic geometry. Just I'll give you the very special K3 surface on which this group of this Apollonian packing, Apollonian group, acts as a group of automorphisms of algebraic quadratic. And for this group was number was computed. So just for this kind of sphere packing, when you're, so this what it means, your limit set becomes union of spheres, which are never overlap. They may allow to be only touched, but never overlap. In this case, your the Hausdorff dimension of limit set can be computed at least approximately. I think the record is like 8 digit or something like. You can never compute it exactly. This is conjecturally, it's really a transcendental number, this Hausdorff dimension. So you can't really compute it. You only compute it approximately. I think McMullin and some other people computed up to the 8 digits. And we know some examples, very concrete surfaces, really just very, very, from the point of algebraic geometry, very simple surfaces, which usually I can try to compute this delta gamma and solve this problem explicitly. But I think this is always an equality like that.